B-Pod Studios.
Second down and eight. Wentz turns and gives. Taylor runs it through a big hole. He's gone. To the 50. Right side, 40. Chased by J.C. Jackson to the 20. Outside to the 10. Into the end zone. That's the ball game.
That sucks. And didn't play your best tonight. Colts have done everything to give you this game.
Take our quarterback over that quarterback any day, though.
Well, unfortunately, the Patriots did everything early to give the Colts the game, and it came down to that final series before the 67-yard touchdown run by Jonathan Taylor, who has now rushed for a score in 11 consecutive games.
Kid's a game breaker. That's the chance you take, man, when you put, you know, you have 10 guys up. You got to commit. You know, it's making McCourty missing the hole, and it's over pursued from the backside. You know, with Hightower. Hightower got stuck in the mud right in the middle. Then it's off to the races for him.
That's how the game was sealed. Hour number two, Felger and Maz from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Maz alongside Big Jim in our update studio. We're brought to you by DraftKings, both on the terrestrial radio side and the simulcast, where we beam across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. Give me your specific thoughts on the performance of Mac Jones, if you could, Maz.
I mean, I thought, I give him credit for hanging in there, but I thought that in the early part of the game especially, I think they had trouble with the whole environment, you know, him included. I think that now there were a couple of plays, before I get to the good ones, the interception down by the goal line, horrendous. And he knew it. He put his hands on his head as soon as he threw it and saw Leonard there. And I chalked that one up to largely inexperience. I think Darius Leonard's kind of waiting there. He's hovering. You're looking past him. You don't necessarily see him in your line of vision.
Or you're just looking at the receiver.
Right, because he's kind of tucked underneath, but you got to know that he's there. And I think a more experienced quarterback, having played in those situations, would know, watch out, there's probably someone hovering underneath, I got to throw it over him, and he didn't. So that one, to me, 100% on him.
You don't give a little credit to Leonard there? That's a really good player.
I give a lot of credit to Leonard, who I think is a stud. And I'll tell you what I didn't realize about him is how good he is in the pass game. Like, he's got a really long wingspan, and he can get to a lot of balls.
The interceptions were really good plays by their linebackers.
Yes, and even the touchdown in the end zone, the second one I think it was that Jones threw to Hunter Henry, Leonard almost got that ball. I mean, he just outside the end of his fingertips. So their linebackers, to me, were great in the pass game. But that said, you know, I thought Jones, he hung in there. He took a couple shots in the second half, too, where I thought, okay, the kid's got some grit. But he wasn't quite ready for that moment in that environment with that noise, at least not this week.
Yeah, I thought the delay of game again was his worst play of the night. In the first half, I thought he was jittery. Bad body language. You know, I texted you this, Maz. There was times where it looked like he was like on the verge of tears or something. Like he was just like, it was too much. I saw a lot of the heavy breathing. I didn't know he does those exercises to keep himself calm, but like on the field, too, it felt like he was a little unravelly in that first half. I give credit to Leonard on that first pick. The second one was the one I thought was inexcusable because I thought he locked in that right side of the field. It was that Okereke who also called him out leading into this game or wanted to put the game into Mac Jones' hands. And I just thought it was a soft throw. There wasn't much behind it. So that one I thought was wretched.
He telegraphed it too. You could see it coming. You know, he went through his progressions and again, Okereke like basically baited him. Mm. He knew the ball was coming and he stepped into it. He made a great catch. But they baited him.
Better in the second half. And overall, you have the better of the two quarterbacks on the field that night.
Wentz blows.
Wentz is terrible.
He blows.
Horrible. And I thought Indy put it up too much. I know they only threw 12 times. Go back in the second half and look at some of those drives when they're up big and they need to run clock. They're throwing on first down several times that I thought was just inexcusable on the part of the Colts. So you own the quarterback matchup, and what good did it do you? What good did it do Tampa last night? What good almost did it do Green Bay last night? And so it's sort of like just because you got the quarterback or the other guy sucks doesn't necessarily guarantee you much, you know, on a week-to-week basis. But either way, the commentary about how Mac Jones looked in the fourth quarter and bringing you back, that make you feel good? That a silver lining? You come out of that feeling more positive than negative that he can bring you back? Because he almost did bring you back.
No.
Why?
Because I thought Indy softened up a little once they get up 17-0, 20-0. I thought they started to back off. They didn't press quite as much. They didn't attack the line of scrimmage quite as much. So I think they got a little softer defensively and allowed the Patriots to move the ball. And look, what I like is Jones's grit. Okay, I like his grit. But I'm not going to give you credit for winning the game unless you win the game. And I also think I'm sort of with Murray, too. I'd be lying if I told you during the game that I didn't look at it and say, I don't know if this kid's good enough. Now, it's early in his career.
That's different than saying, I don't think he's ready for the spot. You thought, I don't know if he's good enough.
Correct. It crossed my mind in the game.
Well, expand on that.
Well, because
that's
again,
a bigger statement.
Well, because there were moments there where I'm with Murray. I thought he looked a little rattled. And he looked as if he lacked confidence at times.
Well, what about, again, fourth quarter? He gets drilled in the head.
Yep.
Takes a real shot, you know, underneath the chin.
Yep.
And then two plays later, it's 3rd and 7, and his best ball of the day was the second touchdown to Hunter Henry.
Great throw.
Tiny little window, had to be right on that spot, and he did it two plays after really taking a shot.
He did.
With the game on the line to make it 20-17.
Agreed.
So that didn't show you something?
It did. But again, I equate physical toughness and the ability to pull out the game at the end to be different things. And so, and look, he played well. I don't want to take that away. Down the stretch, he hung in there. He hung in there, which is a big part of winning those games. I still worry about that arm. I do. I'm sorry. I worry about that arm.
Well, on the Okereke throw, that's the one that's like, ooh, there was like nothing on that thing.
He feels like just a game manager on a night like that. And it's, again, the environment in there was loud. It was loud. What?
Fake loud. I agree. Soucy on one of his calls said the amplified noise here in Indy, fake.
Okay, so no, but again,
it's fake.
You mean manufactured?
Yes. I think
they're pumping it in.
They pump it in. And they're not the only stadium.
Do you think it affected them?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
See, that's the part I'm focused on.
So I know it's a sidebar story, but it's annoying. I think there's stadiums that are doing it. They have all the buttons, all the sound effects from the pandemic, and I think there's guys firing them. I think you fired the boo button when Brady ran out in the field back in October. I've told you that.
Boo.
What was the game? I think it was the Chargers game, the Chiefs-Chargers game. It sounded so freaking loud.
Oh, right. The Chargers don't have that many fans. I thought the same thing the whole night,
right?
Mike. Like, all of a sudden, that place is packed with Chargers fans. No way.
I said, this isn't loud in L.A. No way. They're eating sushi.
Right.
And sitting on their hands. It's not that loud there.
Drinking Chardonnay.
And I thought there was a distinct amount of lack of crowd shots in L.A. back on that Thursday. I didn't work on Friday, so I didn't give you my thoughts on Chargers Chiefs. Way to go, nerds. Way to ruin another sport. But that crowd noise on Thursday night, fake. There's no way. And they never showed me any crowd shots. Like, what is a Charger fan? Do you even have them? Like, so I have a fake. And I just know from experience being an Indy, those freaking hayseeds sit on their hands. It's Myrtle and Ed just off the tractor sitting on their hands, you know, munching Cracker Jack. Like, they are the most mundane, boring, sit-on-your-hands hayseed fans in the NFL. And when I used to cover the games, it finally occurred to me, before it even came out, they were pumping in crowd noise. I'd be so loud as blazes, and I'd look around, and they're all sitting down, not yelling. Like, where's the sound coming from? I couldn't figure it out. It's obvious. Fake crowd noise. Fake. But either way, if it got to your rookie quarterback, that's not a good sign.
No, I agree. But it's so early.
But it's also a combination. You know, so there was a crowd noise, and then there's a Buckner, giving, right through the turnstile, right up the gut for a sack, where he's running for his life. He has his starting left tackle turning around and, pretty much pile driving his running back into the ground. He's got guys running downfield. Like, the offense sort of played into his jitteriness, I think, and I wouldn't necessarily blame him for it.
No. So if you were to say to me, give him a grade.
C plus.
I was going to say C minus.
Yeah, C minus.
Something like that. But
maybe
we're not that
D
far
plus.
Apart. The point is, it's not an F. Okay, it's not an F. But I expected a little bit more. A little bit more that I didn't get.
So the bottom line for me is, I'm glad he had the comeback in the fourth. He showed me something. He didn't show me everything. He showed me a little something there. And the physical toughness I knew about, but after taking that shot on the chin and then throwing, I thought, his best ball of the day, it was another reiteration that he's physically tough. And they do have some, there's something there where maybe he can be that guy in the fourth quarter. But net, the full 60 minutes? Not good enough. He's one of the reasons you lost the game.
Correct.
So it's like, well, great. Okay, so that the fourth quarter showed me what he's capable of in the future. As I've been very clear on from day one, I'm also concerned about this year and this week and today's show. It's one thing to say, yeah, he's going to be a good one in the future. Well, we have shows to do between now and then. And you had a Super Bowl. You had a legit chance for the Super Bowl. You still do, obviously. But much better as that number one seed. So I'm not willing just to say, yeah, I'll be good in the future. I want them to knock at the door and go through the door this year. They have a chance this year, now. Is he good enough this year? Is he good enough now? And that's what had me worried from that game. All right, there's a little reset for you. Back to your phones right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
They... Felger and Mass.
They've been incredibly consistent.
The only thing that's consistent is their inconsistency.
I don't think that's inconsistent.
Yeah, which is exactly what Murray said.
Am I misinterpreting it?
No.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Pressure. Jones. It is caught for the touchdown. Another one for Henry. And this isn't over. And I don't know how this game's going to end. But if you are a Patriots fan or you're in this Patriots organization, Mac Jones coming to life here when everything went against them for three quarters and to give your team a chance. Tell you what, this kid's future is bright.
That's the Fox call, that second TD, Greg Olsen fawning. I think I've been saying Troy Aikman today. It's obviously not Troy Aikman, it's Greg Olsen on that Fox broadcast, who I think is pretty good. I think Olsen's good. Either way, that's sort of the feeling most people had coming out of that fourth quarter, which, okay, good, 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 good. Yeah, feels good for the future. Future, future, future. Yeah. Okay. Between now and 2023, 2024, 2025. A lot of shows to do between now and then. And there is a here and now. You did go into this game as the number one seed in the AFC, which is the inside track to the Super Bowl. So let's not let anyone off the hook for the here and now, because the here and now, you're on the threshold of doing something special. So you need more from that player. It's not enough just to say he put some plays together in the fourth quarter and you feel good about it for the future. No, I'm also concerned about the now.
Yes.
So anyway, there's that. Back to your calls. Pete in Plainville. What do you got, Pete?
Hey, guys. Good show. I just wanted to push back a little bit on Jones. You know, I think he's been a little overrated around here. I think he's a tough kid. But don't forget, he hit Myers right in the hands on that. I believe it was in the first quarter. And then everything kind of went haywire from there. I thought he played, you know, look, and one other thing, on the interception, the first interception, can we, like, just not have N'Keal Harry as the first option on a sluggo? Like, the guy falls down, and then he comes back across and throws the ball to Leonard. Now, look, it was a bad throw, and it wasn't a great play, but can
you think he was going to N'Keal Harry there?
He was throwing to Henry.
Look, Mike, look, he when he drops back, he looks to the left, he looks at Harry,
yep.
Harry does a sluggo and yep. falls down,
yep.
and then he comes back across and throws the ball right to Leonard.
Okay, I have a hard time believing, I mean, I'll go look at it, you might be right. You still can't throw it to the other team's linebacker because yeah. your receiver fell down.
Yeah, it's not, to me, I don't connect the two. The caller does, I don't. But I'm glad he brought up the call to Myers because I wanted to say to you in the last segment.
Great ball.
Yes. Catch the ball.
Have to catch that.
Catch the ball. If you were, and this is why, again, we really were talking about the passing game as much as Jones. In fact, more than Jones. Jones is half of the passing game. He's really more of it, but whatever. You got to catch that ball. The next possession was the block punt. It was a 3rd-and-9 play. He threw the ball down the left sideline. He put it in a perfect spot. And this is one thing we can't hold against Jones. Does he have a real sort of elite receiver yet or
no? You know,
okay, so this is one thing, like, it's hard to judge him necessarily in some of these end of game situations
hey.
Without that absolute lock, stock and barrel go-to guy.
But the caller's right that there were things in the first couple drives that were not his fault. In fact, on the very first drive, he did a good job hanging on to the ball on a strip sack. It was almost knocked out of his hands. He showed
right.
good strength there holding onto the ball, and then he gained 12 freaking yards.
Yes.
I didn't know he had a 12-yard gain in him. He hasn't shown that. Was that his long gain of the year?
I think so.
I mean, I can't remember him running like that at all this year. And then I think on the very next play, they set up that good screen to Janu Smith that had a big gain, and there were illegal men downfield. Men, plural. And so that set him back. And then he took the delay of game, which was his fault, but it was after a penalty had already set him back. And then on 3rd and 17, Isaiah Wynn did not exactly get in front of Buckner there, and he killed him for a sack. But then on that next play, again, he picked up a 3rd and 2 to Myers, and they were going, they were rolling there, and that's when Wynn turned around and blew up Stevenson on that next drive. And then on 3rd and 9, he put it right on Myers down the sideline. Should have been a big gain.
It's a great throw.
Dropped. And then, as you said, the next play, the punt was blocked. And now it's 14-0, and now the fake crowd is up with fake noise. And now it, like, sort of snowballs.
That Myers drop was a huge play in the game.
First two drives, slow start, not his fault.
Yes, and, Mike, that illegal men downfield penalty, you would have had 1st and 10 at the 33 in a scoreless game. Okay, so and I do think that the early score in this game made a difference. It was going to be this kind of game. Both teams went in looking to put the ball in the hands of the opposing quarterback, which means if you got the lead, there was going to be pressure on the opposing passing game. Okay, that penalty in those illegal man downfield, if you're on the 33 on first down, you're getting points.
You're in business.
You're getting points. Instead, they had to punt. Now you're down 7-0.
Tim in Blackstone. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. Murray, you touched on it last week, why the Packers aren't going to go anywhere, and it's the same reason for the Patriots. Their special teams has been putrid. Cam Accord, I don't know what is going on with that area. The procedural penalties, pushing them back, false starts. It's not even the play on special teams. That's been putrid as well. But the actual coaching, and that's got to have Belichick livid, because it's one thing to lose with your rookie quarterback, but to lose because of misassignments and stuff like that when you invest in your special teams to the extent you do, that's just going to chop your, you know what. Thanks, guys.
Jumping off sides on the field goal attempt. You've got to be kidding me.
Brutal.
It's time we take a look at this special teams coach. What's his name?
Cam Accord, I think is how you say it. I know he's driven me nuts just seeing him. The skinny visor guy always popping off, losing his mind.
Oh, those special teams coaches are such hardos. They're such yellers and screamers. What's his name?
Cameron Accord, I think. I think that's how you pronounce the last name.
Yeah, Cam Accord.
Spell Accord.
Can't
A-C-H-O-R-D.
See if the fella's got a wiki page. We need to dig into this fella.
If you never paid attention to him before, Mike, he'll drive you nuts.
Oh, no. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, he's screaming! Like, just losing his mind.
He previously served as an assistant special teams coach for the Patriots. Accord also previously coached at the University of Southern Mississippi and Southwest Mississippi Community College.
Hmm.
So he's a special teams coach at Bunker Hill? Like, yeah, damn football?
Yeah. No, he actually teaches Driver Road.
Yeah. So this is what we need to do now. We need to start mocking his background, because that's what we do for everybody who sucks. Southwest Mississippi Community College.
Yeah.
I bet you those guys come nice and cheap.
No, definitely.
He's a Mississippi fella. Brookhaven, Mississippi.
You put in your 40 road hours, too.
Oh, my God. So this makes sense as to why he's always losing his mind. I'm reading this tweet from like a year ago from Doug Kide, who I think works for PFF now. Either way, Patriot special teams coordinator Cam Accord says he usually drinks 6 to 7 coffees followed by 3 Pepsis per day. Oh, that's healthy.
So he's all amped up. Accord is a graduate again of Brookhaven Academy. He graduated from Belhaven University with degrees in computer information science, computer information science, and sports administration in 2009. He received a master's degree. Oh, great. He's like smart. He received a master's degree in sports management from the University of Southern Mississippi. So like a sports agent? What does that mean?
What's computer management science?
And now he's coaching punt coverage? Yeah, don't you love where some of these guys come from on the Patriots staff?
Yeah.
It's like...
That sounds like Matt Patricia's background. What was that? Hey, what school did he go to again?
I mean, he
went to RPI or something, didn't he?
How does he get the gig? Southwest Mississippi Community College. He was there for 6 years. 6 years at the community college?
Yeah, a lot of partying there.
And he went right from there to being assistant special teams coach on the Patriots. That feels like kind of a jump. He may have taken a pay cut, though, coming from the community college to the Patriots, knowing the way they pay their assistants.
Computer information science.
Here's Jeff in the car. Go ahead, Jeff. What do you got?
Hey, just want to talk. You guys already hit on some of the special team stuff. Obviously, cost them 10 points directly. The offensive line was terrible in the first half. Played it better in the second half, I guess. But the defense, Maz, you mentioned it earlier, the Tennessee Titans thing. It was the play where Taylor scored. It was a mirror image of both Hightower and McCourty taking terrible angles for like the 100th time this year. I know they're like the leaders of the defense, but, you know, I haven't remembered a Hightower play since the Falcons Super Bowl, so I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. I mean, I think he was, in the last couple Super Bowl years, he was kind of like this, where regular season, it's like, I don't know. And then with the money on the line, he usually showed up. So I don't know, is he past that now? Is that no longer viable?
I mean, he's older. He missed a year. And so I worry that, look, and let's not leave McCourty out of this either. I worry that maybe they're both a little older and a little slower. They don't have quite the same confidence that they did in the past. So, you know, they over-pursue in some cases or aren't aggressive enough in others because they're not confident that they can close on angles like they did in the past. I would say their errors on this play were opposite.
Yeah.
It felt to me like Hightower over-pursued and McCourty was a little too passive. A little too, but I put Hightower first because the guy beat him to the side that he shouldn't have got beaten on.
Aren't you surprised that the foot race, too, was so effortless?
Yes.
I thought, you know, J.C. Jackson was there to close, and I didn't even feel like Taylor was running that hard.
No, I think he's sneaky fast, though.
Obviously.
Yeah,
effortlessly fast.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, you have this perception of him being like a power runner, and he's got some Le'Veon Bell in his running too, right? I've heard people say
patient.
That. Yes, and it's true. So he's strong, but I think he's sneaky fast, and he's quick.
Derek in Foxborough. Yes, Derek.
Yeah, on the fourth down when they went for the field goal, I think he should have went for it. I mean, because I know he's old school, and, you know, he comes from an era where no one went for it on fourth down, but if they get the touchdown there and then the touchdown on the next drive, now all of a sudden you have a 21-20 lead, and now Wentz, he wasn't bringing them back from a deficit the way he was playing. So I think you have to, instead of playing for overtime, you have to go for the lead and try to win it in regulation.
Okay, I disagree. And by the way, watching the league more and more, I find it refreshing when someone just lines up and kicks a field goal now.
Same.
Sort of like watching an NBA game and seeing someone take a two-point jump shot, it's like refreshing. Like, oh, you can still just take a two. And you mean you can just line up and take an easy three? I'm sort of rooting for it now. Like, I'd like to see the field goal team out there with all these stupid teams going for it all the time.
Just take the three. Oh. I said this in the Chargers game on Thursday. I know you were out on Friday. We talked about it. Just kick the effing field goal, you jackass.
But especially
take the three.
With the Patriots after that false start on that, that kind of killed a little bit of the momentum. You have the second best field goal kicker in the game in Nick Folk. Just take the three.
And we gave it to you. We lined up. It sort of played out the way they wanted it to, and they had it right there. If they had not allowed the 60, if they had just stopped Indy on that last drive, they would have gotten the ball back with about a buck 10. No timeouts, but a buck 10, just needing a field goal to tie it. It kind of played out the way they mapped it out. It was the right call. Bill will actually explain it in his own words when we come back right after Big Jim Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You are a sorry liar. You are a sad, sorry lot.
98.5.
Literally pathetic.
The Sports Hub.
Hey, Bill, going back to Saturday real quick, can you just explain the decision why to kick a field goal when you were down two possessions with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter?
So I thought that was the best thing for the team at that point.
Well, what makes that the best decision for the team at that point?
To cut it to a one-possession game.
It was after kicking the field goal.
Oh, you're talking about when it went from 20. Yeah, to make it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Fine.
Yeah, well, it's still a two-possession game, and now it's a field goal. And, you know, I thought there was enough time left that we would, you know, have enough possessions to be able to score 10 points, which, you know, we conceivably could have. It would have been, was fourth and goal on the seven. Is that what it would have been?
Yeah, when you kicked it and it became 20-7, it was fourth and goal from the seven.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I didn't feel great about converting fourth and goal from the seven. Had there been less time and, You know, it's a situation. There's a point where you would go for it, or I would go for it on fourth and goal at the seven. Absolutely. I didn't think in that game situation that would have been the best decision. I thought that would have, you know, passed up 3 points and you know, then it would have taken two touchdowns. And, you know, at the end of the game, being able to, especially in a dome, have a chance at a, you know, 50-plus yard field goal, you know, I think it's a lot better chance than you know, scoring a touchdown. And, you know, having a 6-point differential as opposed to a 3-point differential relative to the chances of converting the fourth and seven. But at some point, I definitely would have kept the offense on the field in fourth and seven with less time or no timeouts, or, you know, I mean, you can certainly take that scenario further. And so then you get into the gray area of, you know, which one would you do if it was, you know, less time, fewer timeouts, you know, whatever.
Gotcha. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's Bill describing it, and I found that interesting, too. Again, that was from today. Saturday night, he was in full peni mode. But today, he was apologetic to the media, apologizing for the way he carried himself Saturday night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Telling us it's not his fault. And on that answer, he apologized again. Thank you, Jimmy.
I'm sorry.
No problem, Bill. All good, man. Because when he first started to answer the question, it was back to full peni mode. I did what I thought was best for the team.
Cut it to a one-possession game?
You cut it to one. No, it wasn't, Bill. It was a two-possession game. And then Bill realized, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm being nice today. Sorry. Scrap that. Hold on. Let me just put aside my crap here for a second. It wasn't a one-possession game. It was a two-possession game.
So I thought that was the best thing for the team at that point.
But here's why. And I think he was absolutely right. I think the odds of getting two possessions and kicking a long field goal to tie it were better than Mac Jones and your current passing game. This is the part he left out. Mac Jones and your current passing game picking up fourth and goal from the seven.
I mean, he even said, I didn't feel great about our chances on fourth and seven. He even said it.
If you had Tom Brady, if you had Aaron Rodgers, if you have Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Devontae Adams and guys like this, yeah, okay, it's different. And it's not a knock. So, yes, you don't have Tom Brady anymore, and you don't have Aaron Rodgers, and you don't have Pat Mahomes. You have a next-level quarterback. And not much, you know, something in the passing game. But so it's like that was the right call, I thought, and it worked out. If they had not allowed the 67-yarder to Jonathan Taylor, if they had gotten off the field on that last series of downs, they would have gotten the ball back with around a buck 10, maybe in bad field position. If the Colts had pinned you deep, maybe you're inside your 20. But if there's a buck 10, no timeouts, but there's still time there to get a 55-yard field goal attempt to tie the game. I thought that was the right play.
I mean, I'm stunned. Like, he caught himself at reverse field.
My God.
And answered the question.
And it was an incredibly thorough explanation.
Was it? He sounded like the love child of Sean McAdam and Burt Breer. For crying out loud, he wouldn't shut up. He kept going on and on and on. That's all he did was babble on, giving an explanation for every part of the decision. It was great.
Good for him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, that's like stopping your pee in midstream. It's hard to do. You decide to be an a-hole, you just usually go through with the full a-hole. I can't stop myself. Once I begin, it's over.
It's not your fault.
He stopped it right in the middle.
Unbelievable.
So, oh, wait a minute. Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to be nice today.
Look, fellas, I apologize if, you know, I seemed like I was a little short with you after the game.
That's one of my favorite things I've ever heard from him.
Unbelievable. Really, and again, this one here, he's ready to completely spit in Ben Volen's face. He really did. He was about to fart, and then he went, oh, wait, I got that wrong. I'm sorry, Ben.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was two possession, Ben. Yeah. I'm sorry. My bad. Not your fault.
Yeah, so
not
now
your
that,
fault.
Now that I understand what you're asking, let me explain it thoroughly for you, Ben. Really, what happened to him? And the other thing is, see, is it really that tough?
No. It's always, but it's a lesson for all of us, me anyway. It's just as much effort less to be nice. Just be nice.
And does the opposition now have some sort of insight into the Patriots operation that's going to prevent the Patriots from winning?
Meaning, are they now at some sort of competitive disadvantage?
Right.
I think not.
I mean, come on. Like, so look, I give them credit for being nice today.
Well, okay? But this is why we had a previous caller who did a good job. It's like, all the baby Patriots fans for 20 years, well, he doesn't have to give you anything. He doesn't owe you anything. He's just worried about winning. He's competitive. You know, I'm glad he doesn't give you anything. Yeah. So now he gave us something and was nice. Are you going to criticize him for it? Because this is the exact thing you were, you know, you were glad that he wasn't doing for 20 years.
It's not that tough.
It's just
not. And again, he said, I didn't feel great about our chances on 4th and 7. I mean, to me, that's as close as Bill will ever come to saying, we gave up the 5 yards. We have a rookie quarterback. We don't have great receivers. I'm taking the 3.
The thing you should be mad about is Owenu jumping off because the Colts were doing this very basic little stemming thing they call where they sort of reset on the D-line. And part of the reason they'll do it is to try and, you know, get you to jump. And it's like that little movement there. And they were doing that all night, and Owenu bit. And as another example of your team, not you want to get agitated at Bill. Have him be agitated for the fact he didn't have his team ready to go. The Colts, obviously, this was a big game for that team, that franchise, that city. Like,
they were flying around the field.
Oh, but not just that. After the game, like, they gave the owner the game ball.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that they gave that buffoon the game ball?
Yep.
Like, it was some sort of playoff win or Super Bowl win. It was a regular. It was week 16 of a regular. Made you 8-6.
First time we beat him since 09, man.
He's, like, in tears, and they're handing the owner the game ball, and, like, you should have seen the way the Colts, we'll play some Frank Reich sound later on. They were carrying on after
they
this
really
game.
Were. Yeah, they
guys,
were.
Fellas, regular season win to go to 8-6. But it shows you, I think Bill underestimated it. That was a big, big game for Indy. They played it that way. Frank Reich had him at an emotional pitch, had him ready to go, and you didn't match. You didn't realize, maybe, what that game meant. You realized it in Buffalo. You were ready to go in Buffalo. You understood how they were treating that game. You didn't understand how they were treating this one, though. And that's sort of that's what I would get mad at Bill for, not kicking the field goal there. Kicking the field goal there, I think, was right. It's at least debatable. What's not debatable is that you were not ready. You were not ready for that kind of game last night. All right, long commercial-free segment is next. We'll get back to your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
At this station.
Felger and Mass.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good. And you? Hold on, I have a landline. This is my landline, yep.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
A 46-yard try from the far hash mark. Snap is back. There was early movement. Flags fall. This kick is going to get a little longer.
Shank. Well, it should be no good. You didn't blow the play dead. Left guard moved.
Several officials in a conversation. A couple of flags on the turf. Carl Cheffers, the referee, to open the microphone.
Offside, number 36, defense.
The Patriots.
5 yard penalty, repeat fourth down.
So it's going to be a shorter field goal try, not a longer one, with the offsides on Brandon King. Another mistake by the Patriots special teams unit. Pats players were coming across the line of scrimmage saying the penalty was on the Colts.
Killing yourself.
And now a 41 yard try for Badgley. The snap in place, he swings the right leg, he drives the kick to the uprights, and the kick is good. More points off the takeaway for Indianapolis. 20-0, Colts have the lead early in the third.
That was a big one, too.
Yeah, huge.
Their kicker sucks, too. The Colts kicker?
Bad. Badgley? Is that who it was?
Whoever. Whatever. I'm like...
Well, he's the fill-in because they had Hot Rod there, the kid that
Blankenship.
Was... Yeah, Rodrigo Blankenship. He's hot, so they have this Badgley kid.
I'm like Urban Meyer. From now on, I just refer to the specialist by their position.
Kicker.
I'm not going to take the time to know their name. Kicker. Freaking kicker. Their kicker sucks. But you let him off the hook. Jump off sides on their field goal. Oh, my God.
Brutal. Yeah, Patriots give away 17 points early in that game. The 7 on the block punt, the 7 with the or at least 3 on the interception by Jones by the goal line, and giving away 3 on the field goal. 17 points. And, you know, and the game was 20-17 with 2 minutes to go, so do the math. I mean, you know, you could have easily been up 20-10 in that game.
So this is why I say, I mean, the Colts were the better team, but you lost on the margins. And even though, again, the Colts were better up front than you, without your stupidity, That's a one possession, one score game at the end of the fourth quarter is what that is.
And it basically was anyway.
And it almost was anyway, just about. And so anyway, back to your thoughts here as promised. Billy in Taunton. Go ahead, Billy.
Hey, I was going to say, Felger, that the coaching is sort of what part of what lost us the game, especially on the special teams, the block punt. Nobody was prepared. I thought they fell asleep. You know what I mean? I hate to say it, but it's like how we beat the Buffalo Bills. You know what I mean?
They just weren't sharp, Billy. The Patriots were not sharp, not ready to go. The Colts were dialed in. Big night for them in their building, and you didn't match. You weren't ready for it.
Yep.
That's, to me, that's where you get on Bill. The in-game decisions I thought were fine for the most part. I mean, I don't really have a problem with – I didn't have a problem with them kicking that field goal at the end. I thought their last kickoff was stupid, which Bill again pointed out today. But I thought it was the preparation and how that showed up in the way that you played and how freaking sloppy and stupid you were in this game.
Just quickly, Mike, the third block punt. I know I said this early in the year, and you said it's not something the Patriots typically do during the season. Okay, but how is this special teams coach still here?
I don't know.
How's he still here?
He's one of the guys I wonder where how he gets here in the first place, but it's how they like to do it.
Three block punts of Bill Belichick team. Three.
Bill likes to take him from the very bottom, you know, community college in Mississippi, and the next thing you know, he's the assistant special teams coach, and then he's the special teams coach. And is he qualified? I don't know. Is this his first year? I usually say do this on your own time, but when it's this bad, I guess we have to look at it. Is this Cam Accord's first year?
I think he did it last year. He was there last year.
How were they last year in special teams? I don't remember. I was too busy fixating how awful the quarterback was.
I think they were bad at special teams, too, although Gunner was good. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. We've got Patrick in L.A. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm sorry if you touched on this already, but I called in on Sunday, too. I was so pissed. You know, 19 running plays in this game seemed like all of them were in the first half. When they're stacking the box, and this comes down to Josh McDaniels once again, his lack of creativity, no imagination. Frank Reich schooled him, literally schooled him. And you have somebody, they brought up Janu Smith. You know, I mean, he did get to the pylon. There was a stupid penalty. But the lack of imagination of using a guy with that much natural athletic ability, obviously the Titans did it last year. And now if you gave him to Frank Reich, you're telling me that he couldn't make something out of that guy?
I don't know.
He blows.
He stinks.
He blows. That's not my issue.
If you're just worried about Janu Smith in a vacuum, I think the Patriots do all they can to get him the ball. More than they should is what I mean. All these little design, little trick plays, counters and throwbacks. And, you know, that's how he get there. But they make a point to get him the ball, to get him running with the ball. He's never a factor, it feels like, just in a straight passing game progression. Like, Jones never goes to him. He's probably never there. So, I don't know. But back to McDaniels. Ooh, embarrassing night for him. It sure is. The Colts and their media spent the week saying, well, thank God Josh turned us down and we got Frank Reich. And they tried to tell that to us. The Frank Doyle guy wrote it and the Colts believe it. And they tried to tell us all week and you didn't want to have any of it. How did Frank Reich look in this game, and how did Josh McDaniels look in this game?
Frank Reich, to me, was, you know, that first scoring drive, I think they ran it all eight times, right?
They did.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a well-called drive, though. I remember thinking as they're going down the field, like, wow, because they had a jet sweep. Then they ran that fake Philly special thing down there by the goal line that got them the touchdown. Was that on that drive?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
They call it Patriots special.
But that was, again, I thought that was a good play. And I thought that Reich would do stuff like this, that he'd have some wrinkles in there to just make things look like they were, you know, going to be something other than what they were. And so, you know, it was a called drive, even though they kept it entirely on the ground.
Yeah, the thing that bugged me about McDaniels were, I mean, some of the obvious stuff, like, you know, toss sweeps to Brandon Bolden, gross, that you can see coming a mile away. But why wasn't Kendrick Bourne involved more, you know, especially in that second half when they, you know, Mac Jones heated up? Kendrick Bourne, I think, might be your best wide receiver, and he really had no involvement.
Okay, ask the guy that should have been the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Paul in Rhode Island. Go, Paul, quickly.
Thank you for taking my call. Guys, wonderful show as always. Happy holidays. Listen, let's go to what the Indianapolis Colts are. They are a perfect fitted football team.
A perfect what?
They, a fitted football team.
Fitted? A perfect fitted?
Fitted. They need it this way.
Does anyone know what he's saying?
Yeah, they're tailored.
Yeah, I don't know what he means by
I never know what Paul is saying. Ever. Ever. It's like he speaks Swahili. It's like a different language. I have no idea where he's coming from almost ever.
Yeah, so here's what I'll tell you about Indianapolis. They're completely different with what they were 10 years ago, or wherever you want to draw the line. They're the exact opposite.
Tough defense, running game.
Yes, they used to be Peyton Manning whipping it all over the field and really nothing else. Now they run the ball down your throats, and they have a good, athletic, tough defense. So, like, they're the complete opposite. They're not going anywhere with that guy at quarterback. Okay, so don't have any illusion either. That's not a championship caliber team. They played well on over the weekend, and they're 7-2, I think it is now, in their last nine games after starting out 1-4. So they've turned it around, and good for them. I think they're well coached for the most part. They're tough. They have the guy in Taylor that is, to me, is the MVP of the league. That guy's ridiculous. But with that clown playing quarterback, they're going nowhere.
Here's an update from Big Jim. 90 seconds, no commercials, and we get right back to it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.